about the July results. 1 month into the city's 2020 fiscal year. As is always the case, in July, most of the revenues collected during the month relate to the prior fiscal year. So that's why the revenues look really low in the year-to-date actual column, $563,000 in the general fund. And the breakdown of those is primarily business licenses, rental licenses, building permits, and parking. Compared to the prior year, of course, rental licenses, building permits, and parking are all much higher because of changes City Council voted on in those rates or rate structures. On the expenditure side, the target for July would be 8% of the budget spent, and we are at 6% in the general fund. There are still some vacancies in general government and the police department that explain most of that decline over the prior year. There's really not much else to talk about, I don't believe, on the results for July, unless somebody has any questions.
That's great.
We are where we would expect to be, and better than last year because of changes in revenues that y'all voted on.
Perfect.
Regarding cash, the deposits at the LGIP are $17.7 million, $1.4 million at BB&T. The LGIP deposits are earning 2.4% interest. The total cash is $19,000 as of July 31, 19, compared to almost $16 million, I should say, in this time last year. So we've got good, healthy cash balances, good, healthy fund balances, because we had a good FY19, and also because we have not had any significant spending on the very ambitious projects budgeted for FY20. So we're in a good cash position now, but we know that we have a lot coming for the balance of the fiscal year. Okay, next page, the graphs. I did update this schedule to include the FY20 budget. So the pie pieces on, or the pie on the left is revenues and transfers in. The pie on the right is expenditures and transfers out. And this is just for the general fund. So this is the schedule that would allow a citizen to look at their approximate appraised value of their home and determine how much of their property tax bill is accounted for by police or fire or recreation, or I added the transfers to the capital projects fund because that is a real component of property tax. So that's just a kind of a reference document. Now I want to talk about tourism revenues, and this is mostly an FY19 discussion because there is no July revenue yet. This schedule is a summary of all the tourism revenues, and it's really only meaningful when you have a full year, which now we do. You can see in total, the total restricted for general use, that's the orange column. You can see the increase. We're slightly ahead in FY19 over FY18, which was slightly ahead over FY17, et cetera, et cetera. The blue column, solid column, is restricted for beach only. So that, you can see where we, our city council instituted the beach preservation fee in FY15, and you can see how it has grown over the years. Then the lines, the different colored lines, represent the individual components of what we call tourism revenues. State accommodations, hospitality tax, municipal accommodations, and county accommodations in the beach preservation fee. So you can see that there, it's a very steady revenue source. Fluctuates very little. Or historically has fluctuated very little. But now let's get into the detail just a little bit. Municipal accommodations fee. Every month I've been reporting on this fee, and I've been saying that we're ahead of prior year. And then in July, we got a little less revenue in July than we had in FY18's July. So that kind of flipped that metric, so that year over year, we're showing a 3% decline from FY18 to FY19. If you look on the state A tax page, you don't see that same trend. For state A tax, you see an increase year over year of 7.7%. So I had to ask myself, why? What explains that difference? And it could be that there's a, and this has happened, where the county or the state missed, you know, some taxpayer's tax payment did not get credited to the Isle of Palms account. It got credited to another municipality. And the way you find that is you compare the county detail to the state detail. And there are hundreds of taxpayers, but what typically has worked on in the past is just focus on the top 10, compare them, and then all other kind of shakes out, and the top 10 give you a lot of coverage for the total population of accommodations taxpayers. So that's the process. I need to do that work, and I'll try to have that done by next time. And that's just to try to identify any accounting errors that have been made by either the county or the state, because that could certainly explain a discrepancy between what's been reported by the county and what's been reported by the state. But the other big player is Airbnb. So Airbnb pays the state A tax, but it does not pay the county A tax, as it should. I mean, it legally should. And there is a lawsuit out there that's been working through the courts, I suspect, to try to correct this. And the county staff are working directly with Airbnb to try to get them in compliance, and they feel confident that they're almost there. So the lawsuit, I think, would probably recover some past year's worth of revenue, but regardless of how that turns out, it sounds like the county's doing what it needs to do to get them in compliance going forward, which is good. Because my estimate is that it's about $75,000 annually worth of income. And it's not new income though, right? Because it's probably people who use a different rental agency or rented it themselves, and now they use Airbnb. So we used to have those funds coming through municipal accommodations tax, but now we don't, because Airbnb's not paying. So if you added that $75,000 into the FY19 results for municipal accommodations tax, and y'all know it's the same thing for beach preservation fee because they mirror one another, then you'd have a year-over-year increase of 4.5%. So that Airbnb piece is really is critical.
Yes, sir.
But is Airbnb collecting the tax though?
No.
They're not?
No. But so it would just be gravy, except for the fact that I think everything that is now Airbnb used to be mm-hmm. another taxpayer in the past. I don't think all the Airbnb is new business.
Right.
So that's why it's causing a decline, I think.
I think Carol was next.
I don't think that the people who are renting through Airbnb, the actual homeowners that are, you know, island homeowners, I don't think they know. I think they don't realize that they're not paying all the taxes through, because when you go through the Airbnb thing, because we did this, but we didn't end up renting it through Airbnb, it tells you that taxes are included. It doesn't say all, it just says taxes are, but most people don't realize how many different taxes there are. They just think accommodations tax, and that's a blanket for all accommodations tax. They don't know that there's a municipal estate, this and that. So I don't know if there's any way we could somehow do
So
I mean, I know the
people get a lot of mail. But in everybody's property tax bill, we insert a single page Fairness and Lodging Act notice. And it spells out exactly what the taxes are on accommodations and which governmental entity collects them and benefits from them. But, you know, if I'm somebody and, you know, Airbnb tells me they're paying all their accommodations taxes, it would be unlikely for me to try to match the percentages.
Right, or to dig deeper.
Right.
You'd be just be like, woof.
Yeah. So, people are being notified that they have all these different taxes and this is where they're all going, but that's a piece of paper they get in their property tax bill and it probably ends up in the trash.
John's next.
Thank you. You had an estimate of how much revenue we should be getting from Airbnb. On a related note, do you have any kind of estimate as to, do we feel like there's a lot of people who have switched into Airbnb that are out of compliance with some of our renting business licenses?
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, I think that most people who rent know that they need a rental license. I think there's fairly high compliance with that. Would you agree, Doug?
I would.
And if you get a rental license, you have to prove, before they'll give you the rental license, that you have an active account for collecting accommodations with both the state and the county, that you have a taxpayer ID, and presumably you're paying those taxes accordingly.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Randy, sorry, Andy.
No, it's fine. I just asked Douglas at the same time. Planning Commission was taking up the issue of rental. Do you think the Planning Commission is aware that we're not collecting a tax on Airbnb? Because it would have seemed that would have been an active part of the conversation last week.
So they have gotten really into these compliance issues, but I think their focus has really been livability and not kind of revenue collections. They feel like that's an administrative arm that's really separate from their focus. I would add, though, that we are actively trying, John, to get back to your question of how many, we are working with this. As you will recall, there's this host compliance software that we believe will shore up the missing, those that are kind of falling between the cracks.
It's just a different piece. I would recommend that the dimension that people are absolutely aware. I mean, I was not aware that we weren't collecting taxes at a local level or a county level.
Well,
you mean for Airbnb?
So Airbnb. Theoretically, yeah. And I don't know what percentage of owners know this, but when they get a license and they are doing it solely by Airbnb, so it's assuming they are getting, they have to show proof that they have been through the step of establishing that account with the county and with the state. So I think they would have a hard time claiming ignorance, being that they've been forced to create the account. They're now getting notices you're due. So I mean, I think we are definitely missing some that are just going straight to Airbnb and not going through the process at all. But we think that software will help close that. It's hard to know how many. They have given us their kind of sales sheet that shows, and the number was about 100 less than the number that we have currently licensed. They told us we're seeing 1,400 active licenses, active rentals. Our software we have issued 1,500 licenses, but we think that they're telling us that they're missing some on their list. So we're hoping that, you know, there's a couple hundred on their list that are not on our list, and cumulatively we will get a couple hundred more licenses issued. I think that'll kind of be a one-time bump up, and then we would hope that once everybody's compliant, then we'll be maintaining that number.
You had a question for Debbie. A while back, we talked about the code on the sales and accommodations tax, the city codes.
Yeah, like, I think they
fixed
that.
Because it used to, you know, people were putting down, my clients were putting down 1010, all the money's going to Charleston County. And it should have been 2450. And I just wanted to confirm, we had followed up and corrected that, notified everybody, right?
Mm-hmm. And that could impact the local option sales tax.
Immensely. Other comments, questions?
I just want to say the city was part of the initial lawsuit against Airbnb, and there's a second one that's in the pipeline, and we've had a meeting with the attorneys and expressed our interest. So just so that y'all know, we've been involved in those efforts to try to get them to be in compliance.
Very good.
One question. Is that VRBO is comparable to Airbnb? Are they? Is it the same situation with them?
I believe it's an Airbnb
only
specific case.
Yes, anybody else? Okay, Debbie, if you can continue, please.
So state A tax, contrary to the trend in current trend in muni A tax, is up, as I mentioned, over the prior year, 7.7%. The county is up because, you know, last year was a very low year for the county, so that's a 16% increase. And then hospitality tax on the schedule in your packet shows a 1% increase year over year, but got a report from the Rhonda and the building department today, and there was a collection of a late account that that relates to June, so we'll add that in. So we're a 2% increase year over year in hospitality tax. So you take all those together, and that first schedule does that. And you can see that year over year, we're 3% ahead of where we were at FY18. And y'all recall in the budget, we used 3% increase in tourism revenues for the forecast period, I think for the first 3 years, and then we bumped it down to 2%. As of right now, that assumption appears valid. We'll of course continue to watch it. Okay, drainage phase two. The project worksheet, if you go to page 3, we have received the final construction payout of $280,000. So the construction contract is completely paid out, and there's a zero remaining to spend. There's some additional spending, I think, to come on the engineering and design side, but there's only about $1,500 left on that contract, so it wouldn't be much. The reimbursables and contingency amount of $146,000, I suspect, the majority of that will not get spent in the closeout of the project. So we are very nearly done.
12 years.
We're just getting started.
So I'll skip to drainage phase three since we're talking about drainage. You can see on the contracts and change orders received, I think I've got them all in here, and I meant to go over this with you, Desiree, and failed to do that. But there's the original Thomas and Hutton contract, and there was a change order for the project administration. Then I've added Tabby Lane and the engineering piece of the $500,000 high impact project initiative. So all the contracts that are currently out there are indicated above and the spending below to include spending on the Tabby Lane effort. So we've spent approximately $94,000 on the 131 total contract and there's 37,000 left to go and about 7,000 left on the project admin side. But obviously, this doesn't include any construction, just engineering and design. Okay, the last project worksheet we have to talk about is the underground storage tank replacement. There was a invoice in July from Jones and Frank, a special invoice of sort of outside of the contract to remove and dispose of soil that was potentially contaminated, so it was some cost involved in getting that out of there, but still have $71,000 worth of construction, some of which is retainage, and $17,000 worth of construction admin costs.
Debbie, did they pay any penalties for late completion?
Well, that's going to come out of the what's remaining to be paid to them.
And is the amount remaining to be paid, will that cover it, do you think?
Well, what's the question?
It's not going to exceed the 71.
No, we'll have some.
Well, because they were late.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else, Debbie?
No, sir. That's all I have.
Very good report. Thank you very much. Next is old business. There's none. We're going to get into new business. First item on the agenda is consideration of fiscal year 1920 Carter proposed budget. Something we do every year. There's been several questions. I've had questions about the service and everything that's going on. There's a summation here for everybody. I know some people might have some questions about it. But it's just a formality. We either approve it or not. It's not going to make any difference because it's the county council's say about what happens. But, you know, we go on the record and say that we approve or not approve.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the CARTA budget as proposed for fiscal year 1920.
I'll second that. And at this time, if it's okay with everybody, I'd like to let Desiree explain a few items on the budget and especially about where we're going as it relates to Isle of Palms and the CARTA.
I can talk about the two projects that we've been working with CARTA related to the island. One is the van pool program that we were hoping to have all set up and running this year, and it was a result of some turnover in SCDOT and some bureaucratic ins and outs between, you know, who's holding the funding and who's approving it, and the legal agreements that need to be in place. There's obviously a delay, and we weren't able to have it in place by May. We're still working with their staff. They've been very helpful. We've identified the park and rides. The agreements to purchase the vans is complete. So we're hoping, and the plan is that it'll be ready for rolling it out next year. We don't control any of the funding. We don't control any of the programming. We basically serve as liaisons with them. And I think that it's a pilot program, the first in the state, to provide some transportation solutions to our hospitality, employees of hospitality within the Isle of Palms. The other program that actually was came out of a meeting that the mayor had with other mayors from, you know, the town of Mount Pleasant, Sullivan's Island, and Folly Beach. After the first very busy weekend that we had over here, they had a meeting and discussed about ways to work together to try to mitigate some of the concerns that we have with beach parking. We had a meeting at staff level with the COG, CARTA, and Folly, Sullivan's Island, town, Mount Pleasant, and the city of Isle of Palms. And they are working on developing a beach app that it's meant to be a one-stop shop for all three beaches in the region, for people to go in and find information about traffic, travel times to any of the beaches depending on your location. Also, we'll have information on our beach rules. People will be able to ultimately be able to pay for parking through the Flowbird app that we have on the municipal lot. And we'll be able to push information there about, you know, where there's available parking, when right-of-way parking is full, or the municipal parking lot is full. Also, the county park could be involved. So we're in the process of gathering all the data that we want to have available through that app. All the municipalities is doing that. And the goal is to have that roll out for next year as well.
Very good.
I did ask about, at that meeting, I did ask about the long-term plan to have a park and ride for citizens, for people coming to the beach, and they indicated that it is still part of their long-range plan. Obviously, it's a little bit more complicated. just a little bit. Bit complicated, but it is still part of their strategic plan, and, you know, we expressed interest in continuing to keep that in the pipeline because we do think that it may be a solution to some of our parking problems. in the long term, in the long run. But I just wanted to let y'all know that it's still in the pipeline, and they still include it in their strategic plan for further research and consideration.
I'd also like to remind y'all that the Carter Board of Directors meets every month the day after this meeting. So I'm always behind. Yeah. What's going on? It's always that Wednesday after this Tuesday. But does anybody have any questions for Desiree or me or Debbie?
Quick question. Desiree, on the app that Ron is trying to put together, that's going to be a very active, interactive app where the police from Owl Palm, Sullivan's Island, Folly Beach, Mount Pleasant are saying, all right, traffic is backed up or our parking is full. Mm-hmm. Do y'all want to sit in traffic for 2 hours or and get nowhere or maybe seek alternative choices?
The idea is to create something that's really usable, because right now if you go to Google Maps and you put, depending on your location, you want to go to the Isle of Palms, it'll tell you how far, how long it'll take you to get there. But the idea is to have, you open up the app and the three different beaches will come up and it'll tell you, based on your location, it'll take you, 2 hours to get to Isle of Palms, 20 minutes to Sullivan's Island, and we'll send everybody there. And also, once you, let's say you want to go to the Isle of Palms, you can click on the Isle of Palms and the beach rules would come up. It'll tell you how many parking spaces are. We're looking at how to best track that data. So I think at the beginning, we'll have a lot of historical information and create trends that way. But in the future, I think the goal is to have real-time data based on parking available not only on the municipal lots in Front Beach, but also island-wide.
This should help a lot, I would think.
It'll be a free app.
Free app.
I suspect it will.
They offered it free.
Yes.
Any other comments or questions about
the farm budget? It would be
on. Just checking.
Any other questions or comments? There being none, we'll call the question. All in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any against? Motion passes unanimous. Item B, consideration of the Leola Hanbury Award. And again, probably the best person would be John Moy to lead a discussion on this.
Sure. Yeah, and I like the framing of a discussion because I think we made a recommendation for Personnel Committee. And I think everyone up here can probably get behind the spirit of what we're trying to do, and the actual execution is maybe what will come into a discussion. But for those of you who are unaware, Leola Hanbury was a council member who greatly revered and loved to honor our city staff. And she left an endowment to create an annual award to award the highest or best city employee, however you define best, which the city staff has given us a proposal for that definition in terms of performance and customer service, etc. And so the proposal is to create an annual award, a process for honoring that person that is chosen by a combination of staff members, council, and citizens, at least by nomination.
Correct.
Thank you for keeping me honest up here. So we have a $25,000 endowment to work from. The idea that we have is we'd like this to continue in perpetuity. And the Personnel Committee made the recommendation that we start with an annual gift of $1,000 to this individual with the hopes that we would be able to find additional residents and community members that would like to contribute on an ongoing basis so that we could continue this endowment moving forward. I've heard some concerns that amount might be too large to kind of consider in perpetuity. So we're open to discussion. I think the spirit, again, is to honor city staff, and it's to give something somewhat meaningful. I know Leola Hanbury, the first time she did this without any kind of formalities, just of her own accord, and I believe the amount that she gave was $500. So we felt like our range was $500 to $1,000, and we wanted to maximize what we could give to the city staff.
Were you ready to hear a motion, to entertain a motion?
Sure.
I'd like to make a motion that we make this annual award in the amount of $500 per year.
I'll second.
The reason being is just simple interest. We're getting about 2% on the money, Debbie tells me, and that works out to the interest be $500, this will be guaranteed to be in perpetuity. You never want endowments like this, you never want to touch the principal unless you have to. In the meantime, I'm strongly with John about promoting it, getting it out there and trying to get other citizens. If we could just double it to make it 50,000, then we could give 1,000 every year without touching the principal and guarantee that it will always be around. That's just my thoughts. Any other thoughts? Yes, sir.
That is the prudent way to do it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I would agree.
Be prudent. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am.
So our thought was with $1,000, it would certainly go 25 years, which we thought was a long time. And that we wanted the gift to be enough that it would really feel like a true major sort of bonus. And so many people, so that's what we discussed the amount, and we really felt like $1,000 just felt like a true, you know, major bonus and like major slap on
sure.
the back.
Sure, yes, sir.
I was a part of that conversation, obviously, and still agree with what we're trying to do. I think that it then becomes incumbent upon us and the rest of the citizenry to figure out how can we create something that's sustainable, because ultimately we want it to go to live on past our lives. So let's I think the challenge is maybe we start with 500. It's much easier to increase than to decrease, so I'm in favor of I think starting with 500 and being proactive about trying to increase the amount of the endowment.
Yes, Sandy.
Mr. Chairman, you mentioned that this is an endowment. Has it actually been set up as an endowment? It's just a fund.
It's just a fund. I'm just saying that's how endowments work.
Right. But in the case of an endowment, then you would not invade the principal.
You're restricted
by what the interest would be.
You're exactly right, and thanks for correcting me. That's just the way I wanted it to, my opinion, make it work as an endowment would, even though it's not.
I think along with other members of the personnel committee, we really wanted this to be something that is equivalent to being the top employee on the Isle of Palms. And that if we go forward and let it be known, because several of us have said, people have asked, you know, I'd like to contribute. How do I do that? At least now we have a place to say there's this fund that we want to grow, that sort of thing. So 500, 1,000, you know, I think 1,000 says a lot more of appreciation than 500 does. But like John said, you can always go up, you can't go down. So it's either way for me.
What was the desire of the donor?
Mm-hmm. Well, we all knew her very well.
No, what was her desire for this? Was it to be in perpetuity? So if it was to be in perpetuity, then I think we have to honor a mechanism to do that. If we want to go up to 1,000, we could add 25,000 and set up the endowment. Either way, we should have set up an endowment, and we certainly should encourage others to participate.
Does anybody even know the answer to Ted's question? I never asked her what was her intention on how long she wanted it to last. Did anybody else, all of us that knew her well?
I just don't think Leola would think in perpetuity. Leola was so open and honest and everything. When she came forward with $500, mm-hmm. for Leola, that was a lot of money.
A lot of money, yes, sir.
A lot of money. Wow. And she was so endowed to the public works guys mm-hmm. that, you know, part of my mind wanted to say this was for public works. Because mm-hmm. that's what Leola, that's the group that she really, truly loved. Mm-hmm. But we didn't go there. We said that it would be island-wide, and that we would pick it the other way. But to answer your question, I don't think Leola would think in perpetuity.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I will say that Leola is looking down upon us and smiling when I've created conversation amongst council.
So true. Yeah.
She definitely is.
So true.
Say hallelujah.
Well, you were bookends, if I recall correctly.
We were. We were bookends.
Anybody else? Any comments? Okay, we have a motion that the, it would, consideration of the annual award of $500. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any against? Motion passes unanimous. Thank you. Consideration, number C, consideration of proposal from Thompson Hutton for the design and engineering of Phase 3 drainage project 30, 36, and 41st Avenue, Owl Falls, capital project, public works, Phase 2, $200,000, page 17, line 50. Is there a motion to approve?
So made.
Second.
Yes, ma'am.
Before there's a motion, because there's different options for you all to consider, I thought it would, it might be helpful for us to go through the recommendations that Thompson Hutton presented at the last meeting. We have some drawings up there, and I've asked Douglas to give us a quick overview of all of, and we have also a representative, one of the engineers from Thompson Hutton here, in case there's any technical questions that Douglas and I might not be able to answer. But we'll go through,
Douglas Brooker.
There you go. We'll go through the recommendations for drainage improvements in those, the three major outfalls, 30th Avenue, Forest Trail, also, you know, around 36th Avenue, and then 41st Avenue. As you all recall, there were three recommendations as part of the initial report. Since the presentation, the discussion went through Public Works and Planning Commission, and each group made their own recommendations. So before we get into this, let's go over what the original recommendations were, and then we can get into the recommendations from planning.
Thank you. For Ted's benefit, I'm going to try to be extremely quick. In and out in 2 minutes.
Nice.
As you all will recall, there's three outfalls, and really two of them are simple. There's no real options to choose from. That's what we've called 30th Avenue and Forest Trail. They're tied gates installed basically at Waterway Boulevard that will stop the inflow of high tides and leave those ditches dry until it rains. Where the options come to play are at 41st Avenue, and this is, it gets a little bit confusing because what were called alternates 1, 2, and 3 are now options 1, 2, and 3, and the numbers are all slightly jumbled. So it's going to, when you look at the descriptions, it can get confusing. But I'll try to explain them as quickly as I can. The base option is to just stop the floodwaters at Waterway Boulevard and 41st. So that's kind of the cheapest, easiest base option, and then the ditch from Waterway Boulevard out to the intercoastal court, out to the intercoastal waterway, sorry, stays tidal, and it's obviously open, so that you just have the open ditch that you currently have. That's the base option. The second alternative, that this is the option that the Public Works Committee recommended, was to pipe that section from Waterway Boulevard out to the intercoastal waterway and install the wall out at the intercoastal waterway to stop the tide out at the waterway itself. Benefit of doing that is it would pick up the space. You would pipe out, you'd pipe, and then you would pick up some space there. We've had a little bit of discussion about how usable that space would actually be, and we really haven't gotten down to engineering level of analyzing that space, but we do know the city doesn't own it all. There's some portion of that canal that's on the adjacent property owner's land, so they would be picking up some of the space. Additionally, there is a buffering requirement, a 10-foot buffer that we really couldn't use by virtue of our code. So we think you would gain about 5 feet of usable space adjacent to the driveway, and then it kind of fans out as you get closer to the waterway to be more like 20 feet of usable space. So that's the second option.
Good question.
Go ahead.
Do you gain any benefit in terms of drainage?
I don't think so. I think
so the delta that we're looking at is parking place delta not rented?
I believe so.
Right.
Yeah, there Donnie did talk about, he liked the idea of actually stopping the water out at the waterway because of, you know, leaving that ditch open leaves the opportunity for it to come out and over the shoulders and into the road. I think that if Thomas and Hutton knew that was the concern with the side of the ditch, they could modify it to. So we haven't gotten to the real fine detail of design, but I think they could make both work equally as well from a drainage standpoint. The Planning Commission's view on the option of filling the pipe was filling that ditch was that it really at the expense, and I think it's an additional $1.2 million.
Correct.
$1.2 million. They and kind of an uncertainty of how usable that space would be, you know, and who would control it, who would it benefit? Would it benefit the marina controller? Would it benefit the residents? And there was a lot of unanswered questions about that. How many spaces would it actually accrue? So their recommendation was to basically do the basic fix option, the base option, unless we found that those additional parking spaces would pay for themselves in 7 years. So they kind of had a very bright line of what they felt like was the trigger for funding that additional area. But we don't know that. I mean, tonight, we don't know how many spaces it would be, how much revenue, if any, we would accrue from them. So that was their recommendation. If you don't know.
Most of it's resident parking today.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I can't say most of it, because the section.
It ends at that one sign, so there's some.
Correct.
Further back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're only talking 5 feet.
5 to 20.
Five adjacent to the road and 20 back closer to the waterway.
Yes, I think Susan, yeah.
I was just pointing at
Carol.
So we made the motion to go with the option where we gain the real estate in conjunction with finding grant and funding, which we believe is definitely out there. They're just a lot of different.
We probably need to strike the motion and start
right,
over.
But then the other thing I want to point out is what we were told, the easeability to get to the drainage area closer to the intercoastal and not as close to waterway is a very big factor. It's much more accessible if we go closer to the intercoastal than to Waterway Boulevard. So that also needs to be, you know, we need to be able to get to maintain these boxes.
First thing we need to probably do is get rid of the original motion.
All
because
right.
We've got so
that.
Many options. You made it?
Yes, I made it.
Who seconded it?
I did.
Okay, will you draw your second?
Yes.
Okay.
I withdraw.
So
I want to make one point when we're talking about these alternatives. Mm-hmm. We also have to keep in mind what's feasible from a permitting standpoint. Piping the ditch, according to the engineers, would be the most challenging one to argue for permitting because it is fairly disruptive to the critical area. We don't know until we submit permits, but as of right now, I think that the recommendation or the advice of the engineers is that it's that option, piping the whole channel, would be the most troublesome and more complicated in terms of getting permits.
Mr. Chairman?
Before we talk too much, could I interject one more option? So,
yeah, 2 minutes
so
we, is long.
Oh,
yeah, so we've talked about two options so far. One is stopping the water at Waterway Boulevard, open ditch. One is closing it at the intercoastal waterway and a pipe ditch. Mm-hmm. The third option we've asked the engineer to do is stopping the water at the intercoastal waterway, but leaving the area between the two open for the time. So that would you know, create the space. The space would be there, the infrastructure would be there. If the time were to come that we wanted to pipe it, the hard part would basically be done minus the permits and all.
Susan, I think you had a question?
Well, I...
But that's kind of the third option that we've just asked, and neither the Planning Commission nor the Public Works Committee had the benefit of knowing those. We have pricing for that as well.
Yeah, so what's the pricing?
So that one is, it's marginally more than the base option. I think it's...
Correct. So the new option was the total probable cost for construction is $2,095,000 with a total engineering design fee of $229,500. So it's roughly $100,000 over the...
The lowest.
Correct, the lowest option.
So my question is, given that since our last discussion of Public Works, we've learned some new things. Do staff have a recommendation for that or otherwise?
I think the staff likes the new option best. I think we felt like it was, it's not that much more, and it preserves the ability to do kind of the fully blown. It's a step towards it. And it, you're saving, I think that we felt like if the council was of a mind to spend the additional $1.2 million, and we're obviously focusing on drainage and not the marina or parking, we felt like that $1.2 million could be better used on other drainage projects.
Yes, Brian.
My suggestion was going to be to move the gate towards the waterway and leave the ditch open. But
darn it.
But that's exactly what I was going to offer, Douglas. And I think one of the problems that we have is even though water gets up there, if we were to move that gate up, leave the ditch open, we still can have flame problems within the fire department, within that area. And just engineer it in a way to where in the future,
that's right,
then we can, use those funds to plate that ditch if we see it needs to be done.
Looking at some of the other projects that Thomas and Hutton identified as part of their assessment of the basins, which generated the five projects that we'll talk about later, we just felt like $1.2 million could be better spent initially addressing some of those areas that have been identified as, significantly deficient of either infrastructure or insufficient infrastructure. In the future, if we have additional funding or any different scenarios change within the marina that we could go ahead and pipe, then this option would allow the city the flexibility to pipe in the future.
Yes, sir. Well, I think, were you next, Jimmy, or was it?
They can go before me.
I just want to make absolutely sure that the accessibility for maintenance on this third option, which is now, I don't know, there's base option, option one, option two, I don't know which one.
Option one is the one that
we're talking about now.
Councilman Buchanan likes to say.
Okay.
He was going to come up with it.
So the accessibility for maintenance is really positive because that seems to be a big issue. Yeah.
I think the structure that would be built is the same structure, it just wouldn't have the pipes connecting.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to ask you to speak for a group of people who aren't here because they're not here, and I don't think they've heard, the Planning Commission hasn't heard this latest option.
That's correct.
Based on your conversations with them, in your estimations, what you think they would?
I think they would, yeah. I mean, their main, I think, objection to the piping it was just expending that amount of money when there are other drainage, for not a better drainage project. I think that was their objection. And I think they felt like if it was quickly offset, that additional $1.2 million, then they could foresee it. But without that, I think that, they would go for this option.
Would you recommend putting it to the Planning Commission, or is time of the essence?
In my opinion, kind of what I've been hearing for the last year is time is of the essence. We want to get these things going sooner rather than later.
Is there a motion?
I do have one more comment, one little hiccup.
Okay.
The city's FY20 budget included $200,000 for design and engineering for phase three drainage. So this option would bring the total engineering and design fee to $229,500. So it's it would be over budget by $29,500. Just want to make you all aware of that.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair. Douglas, you and I have discussed this many times, and as Ryan was bringing it forth, this is a public safety issue. We basically had the Dutch dialogue in Charleston. This is basically the same thing. Stop it at the source, because if we bring it all the way back there, water's still going to flood the road. It's going to flood our fire trucks where they can't get out. We have to vacate them, stop it out by the waterway, and it's better, and I'm for it.
Okay, Sandy.
Just a clarification. On the other drainage, didn't we have like $146,000 that was not spent?
Phase two drainage.
Phase two drainage.
Phase two drainage. Does that make up the $200,000 that's in the budget, or is that $146,000 above the $200,000?
That goes into the capital projects fund balance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's kind of all the same.
Right.
Or the same money.
Okay. Are we ready to? Oh, yes, sir.
Allow me to make a couple observations. First of all, my interest in brevity is not for council, but for staff's sake.
I appreciate that.
If it's more difficult, doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it. It's the Planning Commission, it would seem to me, to come up with the best recommendation, not to worry about the fiduciary responsibilities, which is council. There was a discussion at Public Works about the impact on the fire department. And so this effort, at least blocking it at the source, is a step in the right direction. We don't have agreement on what the marinas to look like in the past, regardless of our efforts and our community efforts to make a master plan. This could be impacted by that, or our decisions here could affect that in the future. We talk about parking places, but we've also talked in the past about community access through a pedestrian pathway, whether it's golf cart, bicycles, or walking. So we're missing an opportunity again with our biggest, one of our biggest assets, to look at it holistically. Thank you.
Okay. Try this one more time.
In response to that, I believe this is the good way to go, because it still allows that possibility. I feel like we have a lot of question marks around the marina right now, to be kind of guessing what we want there. It's a little premature. So I think this is the way to go.
All right, then we need a motion.
I'll make a motion to adopt option three.
No, option one.
So you're looking at the,
there's
no
three.
Well, Douglas. I'll second that. Yep, Desiree.
It'll be option one from the August 16th memo from Thomas and Hunt.
Yeah, it's
Everybody clear on that?
Right there.
Right here.
Any further comment?
Douglas's recommendation.
Correct.
Yep. Douglas's recommendation.
So the total cost for the construction would be $2,095,700, and then the total engineering design fee would be $229,500, which is what you're approving today.
Okay.
I'll second it.
And with the understanding that, of course, this is all conditional upon permits.
Correct.
In fact, the engineers come back, mm-hmm. they can achieve the goal that we want to achieve. If they can't achieve that goal, we scratch it and start over again.
Good point.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Call for a question. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any against? None. Thank you, Douglas. Motion passes unanimously. Now, we might still need to hear from Douglas. Item D.
This should be what?
Consideration of a proposal from Thomas and Hutton in the amount of, 62.6 for the design and the five small internal projects.
Yes.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any against?
Trying to get you home earlier.
Thank you, Ted.
Item E, report of budgeted expenses between $10,000 and $25,000 in accordance with section 1-10-3, subchapter C. Approval of a contract in the amount of $10,000 with host compliance for a short-term rental management software. Is Desiree, you have any comments on this?
No, this is just a report.
Okay. There's no action that you'd be taking on that.
I have a question.
Yes.
There's some up and down numbers that have come based on this software package. we're asking for $10,000, but there's been numbers as high as $15,000 for the base and $2,500 for each of the sites. So how have we managed to go back to the original rather than what we discussed?
So that this gets even
more
complicated than what's on your agenda, unfortunately, Ted. The
worry's here. I'm not going anywhere.
So what has happened is the city went through a budgeting exercise with a company called Short Term Rental Helper. We were given a quote of $7,500 plus, and it was $2,000 for each additional site that we wanted to scrape. So we thought that that number came to $13,500.
Which is what we budgeted in FY20.
Which is what we budgeted, but that was gonna get all of the Airbnbs, VRBOs, and then we were gonna pay additionally to have the larger companies out here also kind of monitored by this software. Between the time that we budgeted it and we went to go purchase it after the budget was enacted, that company has been sold. It now has become, it went from short-term STR helper to now host compliance. The budget passed, we reached out to them, we said, okay, we're ready to go now. They then gave us a base quote of $15,000 plus, still plus the $2,000 per site beyond the three, which got us to like $22,000. We've gone back and forth with this company, and this, on this agenda, they had agreed to come down, the salesman agreed that they could do it for $10,000. We then said we need the proposal for this agenda. We got the agenda prepared. We got an email just today from the CEO saying it's not $10,000, it's $15,000 plus the $2,000 per site. So now it's gone, just today, it's gone back up to in the realm now of $20,000.
I have not yet had a chance to talk to this said CEO because I do believe that they have a responsibility to honor the quote that they have provided to the city. So I ask some time to have that conversation with them. And if it's up to $10,000, then the city administrator can approve because it's budgeted. If it's less than $10,000, but because we don't know exactly the true number, we haven't had that conversation, then...
And I think over 10 requires...
Over 10 requires... So if it's over 10, it would come back to city council for approval. If it's under 10, then I would approve...
Where are they located? Do you have any idea?
Chase on this.
I don't know.
Yes, sir. Do you have confidence in this contractor? Okay, that's good.
We do. they work with many municipalities, and they're highly recommended.
Are there other qualified contractors that can do this work?
So we started getting this runaround. They are the company that Charleston County hired. In that contract, they gave this, you know, they gave basically pricing for other people to join in. Every other community in the area has joined in. So Folly Beach is using it, Town of Mount Pleasant's using it, City of Charleston's using it, Town of Mount Pleasant and Charleston County are all using it. So we, you know, and they seem to be satisfied with it. We started getting this runaround. I then went to their competitor and said, you know, hey, we're now getting this higher pricing. And they looked at the new price and they said, we will be twice that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest our best position is for our administrator to tell them what we have budgeted, mm-hmm. and can they do it for that amount, and if we have confidence that they'll perform.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
But I also think that we're at the point where if it's $22,000, we need to buy the software. We're not going to get the information if we don't get the software. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we're haggling over the $10,000 versus the $15,000, I think council should give direction to staff whether or not we want software to do this and what the price is and whether we go over budget to get it.
I think Councilmember Kinghorn just did that.
Um,
Yes.
Just a couple of things. I agree with what Sandy just said, but secondly, I'm just a little curious, having been in the software business, did the salesperson tell you the CEO turned it down, or do we have something from the CEO telling us that?
The email we received just before this meeting was from this directly from the CEO?
From the salesman with the CEO copy.
Copied, yeah.
Yeah.
And the CEO saying.
I have a feeling there's an answer somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
I agree with Ted, let administration work it out.
I don't think there's any action we need to take. Brian?
No, and I don't agree. And I think, I mean, if we move forward with it, or when we do move forward, I think the amount of money that we're gonna capture from money that we're not capturing, it's gonna offset anything that we've,
Very good. Good, that's right. Okay, moving on, miscellaneous business is done. Next meeting date will be 5 p.m. Tuesday, September 17, 2019, council chambers. There's no reason for executive session.
So moved.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.